well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Today, you're going to be keeping me company. We are going to get to some headlines from around the country, though. Headlines that, honestly, would have been unthinkable just a week or so ago. Let's take a look at a couple of news items from around the nation here. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has ordered, quote, non-life-sustaining businesses closed. And while the governor's order does not specifically mention gun stores, and in fact, the governor's order says that hunting and fishing industries are in fact life-sustaining industries and are allowed to remain open, sporting goods stores, as the closest he gets to gun stores, sporting goods stores and, quote, miscellaneous retail establishments, they have been ordered closed. Now, again, the governor's order doesn't specifically mention gun stores in the stores that have been closed either. I believe that Governor Wolf, hoping to avoid controversy by actually calling gun stores out by name. But we know that there are gun stores in the Philadelphia area, and I'm guessing that we've got gun stores all across Pennsylvania who would argue we are an essential business, particularly during a time of emergency when people are concerned. Not only about their health in terms of the coronavirus, but in terms of a rise in violent crime. That it is absolutely essential that these individuals be able to exercise their right to keep and bear arms, and that the state of Pennsylvania should not be able to deprive individuals of their right to keep and bear arms. We're seeing this in California as well, where Governor Gavin Newsom has ordered 40 million residents to basically shelter in place, to stay at home. And again, only essential businesses are being allowed to operate. Now, the governor's order in California, I have not seen it specifically, but I don't know that it, again, references gun stores. We do know that in Alameda County, California, which is a very anti-gun locale up in the Bay Area, they passed a law a couple of years ago that basically banned any new gun stores from opening up because of the changes to their zoning laws. Well, Solar Tactical out in California has been told by the Alameda County Sheriff's Department that it needs to close. It has said on its Facebook page, we're remaining open. We're going to be handling customers via appointment only. They are encouraging all of their customers to reach out to local government to say, look, this is an essential business right now. Meanwhile, Sheriff's Sergeant says, well, we've told them that they're not allowed to open. So the next step would be go there and, leave a sign up on their door basically saying you're not allowed to be open. And then after that, so they might have to send out law enforcement. I think Gavin Newsom has said it's a misdemeanor offense to remain open under this shelter-in-place order. But Governor Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania has actually attached some financial strings. He has said that businesses that he says are non-life sustaining that remain open are not going to be eligible for any sort of financial help. So he's applying the power of the purse to these small businesses. Now, the big question is, where are the lawsuits, right? Because I do believe that they are coming. That's one of the things I'm going to be working on today, and hopefully have more information for you on Monday. But reaching out to Second Amendment organizations around the country asking, are you filing suit? Have you found plaintiffs to try to challenge any of these emergency shutdowns? And note as well, by the way, that and by the time you see this, this could be wrong. But right now, what we're seeing is the most restrictive orders when it comes to gun stores are coming in anti-gun states, states with anti-gun governors. We have not seen this in a constitutional carry state, for instance. Now, in Reno, Nevada, gun stores are open. Reno Gun and Range is getting a little creative in how they're able to maintain social distancing and still provide firearms and ammunition for those Americans who want to exercise their right to keep and bear arms right now. So what Reno Gun and Range is doing, Basically, they're letting one customer inside the store at any given time to pick out the firearm that they want. They'll fill out the paperwork, and then they'll wait outside. Individuals who are waiting to pick up a firearm, they've ordered it, but the background check has not come through yet. When it does, you can just drive up, curbside pickup, and that way you don't even have to come in the store. So that's what Reno Gun and Range is doing. The story that I saw, a little unclear. The owner of the store said that they were cutting down on classes. They were cutting down on range rentals because of the rules that prohibit, quote, entertainment businesses from operating right now. So if you're going to the range, just have a good time. That, you know, you got to rent a couple of guns and just, you know, just bang away for a couple hours. That might not be allowed. But if you're going to the range to get a concealed carry course or to take a basic pistol course, that may still be going on to some limited extent there at Reno Guns and Range. But it seems to me that, you know, the states that actually have officials who care about infringing on individuals' constitutional rights right now would take a look at what stores like Reno Gun and Range are doing and allow them to practice, again, those safe social distancing measures while remaining open as an essential business. But again, so far in California, in Pennsylvania, we simply haven't seen it. And we await, again, those court challenges, which could be difficult because a lot of these courts are now operating on an emergency basis. But we really are talking about one of the most fundamental constitutional questions in our nation's history. During a state of an emergency, when you have, city officials saying we're not going to be arresting folks for nonviolent crimes or low-level crimes, we're going to take down their information, we're going to basically serve them a warrant after all this is over. When you have individuals who are being let out of jail cells, it is not an unreasonable fear to be concerned about a rise in violent crime. That is not unreasonable. I hope it doesn't happen. There's no guarantee that it is going to happen. But what I'm saying is it's not unreasonable to be worried about those things at this point in time. And again, any government that steps in, and right now we've seen this again at a couple of state levels and at the local levels in some occasions. By the way, I did just wash my hands before I got on the air here, so don't give me grief about touching my face. We're all clean. Anyway, the fact that you've got these states that are now doing this really does pose the most significant constitutional question of the right to keep your arms, certainly since the Heller case, and I'd say arguably even more important than the Heller case right now. But you need plaintiffs, right? You need people who are going to challenge these orders. And frankly, you need a functioning court system in order to get this suit or any potential suit before a judge. So again, by the time you hear this, we may have other states that have announced similar policies, and we may have other gun stores that are vowing to remain open. This is a very fluid situation that we are in at the moment. We're going to try to keep you up to date as best we can, both here at Bearing Arms Camera Company and on BearingArms.com. We are updating the site throughout the day with the latest Second Amendment news and information at this critical point in time. So make sure that you are heading over there as well. Now let's get to some of your emails. We do have our armed citizen story. We have our recidivist report. We have our good deed of the day to get to as well. But I want to check in with some of you. Donald writing in says, just found your podcast in Bearing Arms. Longtime fan of your show on NRA TV. Been binge listening and taking a break to email you. Great podcast. Brings back the long-running show that you had. I hope you and your family are doing well. And best of luck. Now back to binge listening, says Don. Well, Don, thank you. I'm glad that you found this as well. My family, honestly, I am so blessed right now. We have, you know, space that we can walk around. We're not confined in a studio apartment somewhere. My wife was not able to get her chemo treatment today. Went down to the local hospital. I was kind of freaking out about her being down there. But that's the one hiccup that we've had right now, is that her blood levels are not where they need to be in order for her to get the treatment that she needs for her cancer. But We're going to fight through it. We're going to work through it. And I appreciate you writing in, Don. Mike writing in as well. He says, I'm a regular reader, Bearing Arms, and I thought that I would respond to a couple of the questions that you had. How well are you prepared to spend a couple of weeks at home if need be? Mike says, and this is as of a couple of days ago, Mike says, I don't plan to spend a couple of weeks at home. I'll lead my normal life. I'm 70 years old in very good health with a good immune system. From what I've seen and read, and someone like me, I'll have mild symptoms and recover fully. I do not plan to get the vaccine when it comes out. How has your life changed already because of the response to the coronavirus or the virus itself? Mike says, no changes, period. Mike says his biggest, to the question on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the coronavirus? He says, my biggest concern is the economic and global scare that it's causing in business and financial markets. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the public response to the coronavirus? He says, a 9. So the public response so far has been idiotic. Those that are at risk, old, sick, compromised immune systems, and bad health should avoid public gatherings. But most can lead a normal life, and lots of people will contract COVID-19 and recover with only minor symptoms. Mike, again, this is as of a couple days ago. And Mike, if you're watching, I'd love to know if you've changed your mind at all. Mike says, I think this is mostly a lamestream media hoax to scare the financial markets and disrupt the economy and hurt America and Americans. You know, I don't believe that, Mike, simply because, I mean, if that were the case, you would have to have the president involved in that. You would have to have, honestly, the entire world involved in that hoax. And I don't want to get into the politics of this. I'm certainly not a political expert, and I'm not an economist. But I will say this. The idea that you can lock down the American economy or broad swaths of the American economy for months at a time does seem impossible to me. We saw the Wall Street Journal come out with a big editorial today basically saying that the cure, quote unquote, is worse than the disease itself. And I've been thinking a lot about this. You know, as I said, my wife has had cancer for 3.5 years, and she's gone through chemotherapy I don't know how many times. And the idea of chemotherapy is we're going to poison the cancer. We're going to poison your body. And we hope that the cancer gets killed before you do. I mean, and that is, in essence, you know, a very simplistic version or view of how chemotherapy works. And I see a lot of parallels right now with how we are responding as a nation to the coronavirus epidemic. We're going to go through massive economic pain, and we're going to hope that the economic pain that we're going through by shutting down broad swaths of the economy will kill the virus, or at least slow the virus's progression, allow us to keep it in check before it utterly destroys the economy. And even, you know, with somebody I love dearly who is at a greater risk for death. She's, you know, my wife is in her early 50s, but she has an underlying condition. Based on the mortality rates that we've seen, I would say that the odds of her surviving, if she gets the coronavirus, probably around 80 to 90%. I mean, it's better than 50-50, but that's, you know, those are some pretty scary odds when you're talking about somebody you love. And then there are those Americans who aren't aware of the underlying conditions that they have. We've seen, you know, a number of individuals already reported in critical condition in hospitals around the country who are in their 20s and 30s. No underlying medical conditions that we know of. They might discover some going forward. But also keep in mind, when we talk about underlying medical conditions, we're not always just talking about things like lung cancer. We're talking about high blood pressure is an underlying health condition. And there are a lot of Americans who suffer from that. I see the need to treat this seriously. The devastation that this could cause if our hospital systems are overwhelmed, not just to coronavirus patients, but to you know, anybody in need of medical services for a period of time, that toll would be staggering. At the same time, I am absolutely amenable to the argument that you know, shutting down the entire economy and causing a recession at best is going to be more painful than the idea of letting this disease spread through community infection Try to isolate those high-risk cases as best as possible. Hope and pray. Know that it's going to be bad for a while, but you persevere through it. The sort of mentality that Londoners had during the Blitz and the V2 bombs raining down on London during World War II. They went about their life. They didn't spend 24 hours a day in a bomb shelter. I get both of those arguments. I really do, and I think that every day that this nation is in a semi-lockdown, the arguments are going to grow for letting that lockdown, for lifting that lockdown. I see both sides. I absolutely do. And I think my personal feeling is that at some point this probably is going to have to give. And we are, as weird as the world as we're living in now may be, the world that we live in a few weeks may be much, much more weird and much more abnormal, because we may very well try to reopen parts of the retail economy and the front-facing economy and just try to cope as best we can with the rising numbers of COVID-19 patients and the overwhelmed hospital system. And we may all know and love somebody who passes away from this illness or who suffers life-threatening circumstances because of this illness. But we may already know those folks anyway. I think that's the problem for a lot of folks right now is right now the cure seems far worse than the disease itself. A week from now, 2 weeks from now, that may not be the case. And oddly enough, if it's not the case, if 2 weeks from now we feel like, okay, this disease is really bad, we're now seeing, you know, these awful impacts, that probably means we haven't done a good job of flattening the curve. And then the argument becomes, okay, as awful as this is right now, did it accomplish what we needed to accomplish, and what good is continuing to keep the economy locked down going to do? Again, these are big existential questions about how this country is going to operate. I wish that I was in a position to have some sort of influence, but I'm struggling right along with everybody else to try to figure out the answers to some of these questions here. Doodlebug also wrote in with some responses to those questions that I had asked. As opposed to our last viewer, Doodlebug, 100% prepared to spend a couple of weeks at home if need be. How has your life changed already because of the response to the coronavirus or the virus itself? Doodlebug says, just that extra tip to the grocery store. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the coronavirus? 1, not at all. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the public response to the coronavirus? 10, says Doodlebug. Not for myself personally. I can shelter in place as long as it takes. But again, frightened people can easily develop a mob mentality, which could necessitate, quote unquote, calling in the troops. And then down that road we go. I think that that is not a, it's not something that I'm spending a lot of time worrying about, but it does it appear as unthinkable as it would have, let's say, a month ago? Absolutely not. It is much more thinkable than it was a month ago, which is, again, one of the reasons why I just believe, for better or for worse, that this moment that we're in right now is not a sustainable moment. Now, that doesn't mean that the alternative may not end up being worse. It may very well end up being worse. I'm more than a one concerned about coronavirus, because I'm concerned about the death toll if our hospital systems were to become overwhelmed. And again, I don't expect that to be the case in every hospital across the country. But some of the hotspots, like you've seen Northern Italy, Lombardy region, obviously Wuhan in China, where the virus originated, Seattle, New York. I'm a little concerned about what's going to happen in Florida, honestly, because of the lack of social distancing there. These are the places right now where the outbreaks seem to be the worst. California as well. But I don't see every state or certainly every city having the exact same experience when it comes to the coronavirus. But I do believe that there are going to be some parts of this country that are hit particularly hard, and I am worried about that. I am worried about the I'd say I'm probably at about a 6 for the coronavirus, and right now I'm about an 8 for the economic impacts and the public response to the coronavirus. I'm concerned about both. And I don't know, again, that there are any easy answers right now, but I know that the questions certainly keep growing by the day. One more question from Keith, who wrote in with a non-coronavirus-related question. That's nice every now and then. It's like a breath of fresh air. He says, my question has to do with whether concealed carry permit laws are actually constitutional, since the Second Amendment states the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. At the time of the Founding Fathers, to keep a firearm would have meant to carry it. The bear a firearm meant to bring it to bear on someone or something, says Keith. It's my opinion that both methods of carrying a firearm, concealed or open, would have been included in the writing of the Bill of Rights. Do you know of any court cases that would either support or deny this opinion? Well, the court cases are coming, Keith. I mean, we're not there yet in terms of the Supreme Court having a case dealing specifically with the right to carry. If you look at the historical text and the legislative text, going back to the founding of this nation, it's the definition, as I understand it, of keep meant to possess. The definition of bear meant to carry. And concealed carry was not really a thing. Back then, there were, you know, it certainly wasn't a phrase. Generally speaking, if people were bearing arms, they would have been bearing long guns. They might have been bearing pistols if they were traveling. But generally speaking, that would have been, depending on the time of year, open carry, what we would consider to be open carry, or concealed. Because if you're traveling in the winter, you obviously have your, you know, coat covered. But there were no prohibitions on carrying concealed at the time of the founding. When you start to get into the development of revolvers and pistols become more commonplace, then you start seeing legislative language in state constitutions about the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but nothing here within shall limit the ability of the legislature to regulate the concealed carrying of arms. So 1830s, 1840s, again, the carriage of pistols is becoming more common. The mindset back then was, well, look, if you were a good, honest actor, there's no reason for you to hide your gun, right? So you walk around with your firearm open, and only brigands and bad guys are walking around with concealed firearms. Obviously, now that mindset has changed. And so where we are right now, basically, you've got we do have challenges that are coming. We've got a couple of cases that are actually up at the Supreme Court right now. One dealing with New Jersey's carry laws. You've got challenges to California's regime. And that's where it gets really interesting, because the Ninth Circuit has ruled that you don't have a right under the Second Amendment to carry a concealed firearm. But they didn't say anything about open carry, because clearly the right states, you've got the right to keep, you've got the right to bear. So the Ninth Circuit says, well, doesn't mean you got a right to carry a concealed firearm. Okay, well, that must mean then you've got a right to open carry as well, right? If you can't carry concealed, you got to be able to open carry. Not so fast. Case out of Hawaii, also in the Ninth Circuit, Young versus Hawaii, challenging the ban on open carry in Hawaii without a license. A license that you can't get if you live in Hawaii. So in essence, there is a ban on all forms of carrying, because concealed carry, Hawaii has issued just a handful of concealed carry licenses over the years, mostly to civilian employees of the Honolulu Police Department. And then open carry is banned as well. So that case is right now in the Ninth Circuit on bonk. So a broad panel of justices, or judges rather, than the Ninth Circuit, not just a three-judge panel, but I think it's 14, are considering this case. But this case is on hold right now until the courts see what the Supreme Court does with a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus New York City, which doesn't deal specifically with the right to carry, but it does deal with the right to transport a firearm. So that's the long-winded answer. Is that this is a question that is being asked in courts right now. I think, honestly, if I were to predict what happens down the road, I would predict that the Supreme Court, when they do hear a case like this, and again, this is just my opinion, okay? I think that the court will find that, yes, you have a right to bear arms. But they may say, you know, look, go back to the 1830s, 1840s. You can regulate the time and manner in how those arms are born. So they may say you can allow for concealed carry and open carry. You could allow for concealed carry but not open carry. You could allow for open carry but not concealed carry. But you have to allow some form of carry for the average American, or else the average American's rights are being infringed. All right, if you have more questions or comments, shoot me an email, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. We'll get to more of them next week. Meanwhile, let's get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report as well. We will start there, as a matter of fact, from Meridian, Mississippi. Fox 30 reporting on a murder suspect who was taken into custody thanks to help from the public. This murder suspect, well-known to law enforcement, 22-year-old female was the victim in this case, Clarissa Ruffin, who was found inside an apartment with multiple gunshots and stab wounds to her body. She is survived by her three children, who are 4 years old and younger, and who were reportedly on scene at the time of the shooting, according to the Meridian Police. Murder suspect, 29-year-old James Dennis Stevens, who is Ruffin's boyfriend and father to her youngest child. According to Meridian Police, he fled the scene prior to police arrival, but with the public assistance, police were able to apprehend Stevens minutes later at an apartment complex. He is a prior convicted felon who is currently on probation due to violence with the use of a firearm. Felony charges that are pending against him at this moment include weapon possession by a convicted felon, child endangerment, and murder. So again, we know that this individual, now arrested, accused of murdering a 22-year-old mother, had previous criminal histories, should have been behind bars, was not behind bars, and instead, now a family is grieving, and a suspect, again, known to authorities, back behind bars where he should have been to begin with. Our armed citizen story of the day from the great state of Georgia, where the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports on a man who was shot while trying to break into a home in Gwinnett, Georgia. Looks like this individual is going to survive. Shot in the leg on Wednesday when trying to break into a home. According to a Gwinnett police report, resident was in his home on Peachtree Street. Is it a law, by the way, that like every town in Georgia has to have at least like half their street names begin with Peach? Man told officers he grabbed his gun, ran to the door before firing two or three shots. Heard a man screaming and then opened the door to find the suspect, 38-year-old Ronald Reuben Hayes of Doraville, Georgia, with a gunshot wound to his leg. Resident then slammed shut the door, locked it, grabbed his phone, called 911. Hayes taken to a hospital, is expected to survive. After he's released, he's going to be taken to the Gwinnett jail on a charge of first-degree burglary. Police say that no charges are going to be filed against the resident who shot the suspect, given that that homeowner was acting in self-defense. Sounds like the right call to me. And finally today, our armed citizen... No. I'm sorry. We just did our armed citizen story. Our good deed of the day from Bakersfield, California, where a police officer helped rescue a man trapped in a truck that had gone off into a pond. You can see there the water level. This was not a good situation. KGET says police, city, county firefighters responded to the off-road crash just after 4 p.m. on Thursday afternoon after a gentleman ended up in a reservoir there. Bakersfield police said an officer arrived at the scene, learned the driver was trapped inside the submerged vehicle. Officer Anthony Kidwell able to pull the driver out of the vehicle and onto the roof. Then firefighters were able to get Kidwell and the driver off the vehicle and out of the water. Driver taken to a hospital with minor injuries. Police say alcohol or drugs may have been a factor in the crash. Officer Kidwell was not injured in the recovery efforts, thankfully. And, you know, again, now is not the time. Now, you know what? Never is a good time to drive drunk. Never is a good time to drive impaired. Now is a particularly bad time to do so. Law enforcement going to be stretched thin. And honest to goodness, you want to be completely selfish about it? Do you really want to be in a hospital right now for a few days recovering from your injuries? Do you really want to go to jail? Do you want to be booked? Do you want to be fingerprinted? Do you want to go through that whole experience right now? If you want to have a drink, stay at home. Because oddly enough, while gun stores around the country in places like Pennsylvania and California are being told that they are not essential businesses, beer and wine distributors are, apparently. So, listen, I love a drink as much as the next guy, but you give me a choice, I would rather be able to go to a gun store than pick up a 12-pack right now. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Thank you again for being a part of the program today. Be safe, be well, be concerned, but do not be panicked. We will get through this, and we will have more of the latest Second Amendment news and information for you on Monday. Deep breaths this weekend. It's okay, by the way, to tune out the news for a little bit. In fact, it's probably a good idea. Spend as much time as you can doing the things that you love and enjoy. And we'll see you back here Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.